Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Working Title here on CGLO 1690 AM, everyone. You're with Danny Gold and Cleo Doherty. We're talking Percy Shelley. God, I'm not going to get his name right, even though I keep repeating it to myself during the ad break. I'm like, Percy. I'm going to call him Perry.
Perry Winkle Shelley.
Yeah. It's Perry? I guess call him Percy again. God damn.
No, it's Percy.
Oh, it is? It is Percy. Okay.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh, man. Percy has started being a mentor for William Godwin, who's Mary's father, and they fall in love and they profess their love for each other after visiting Mary's mother's grave, and it is rumored that Mary Shelley wanted to have sex on her mother's grave.
I've heard this actually. Yeah. I've heard this urban legend because she like hated her mom so much, right?
Yeah. So
yeah. Okay. I've heard that before. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. And yeah, so basically that happens. Maybe it doesn't happen. Who knows? And
yeah, right.
Percy goes to her father and says that he's going to leave Harriet, who he's still married to live with Mary, to which William responds by banishing him from the house and forbidding him to see Mary. Yeah. And about a month later, Mary and Percy elope, and they also move around a lot throughout the UK. Shelley really doesn't have a lot of money. He secured a little bit of a loan from William and things like that, but they're, you know, pretty poor. And Shelley's son by Harriet is born and he's traveling abroad, and so Mary is alone and she also gets pregnant and she's quite sad and depressed. And so Mary gave birth prematurely, and her child unfortunately passed away 10 days later. And on top of that, it was suggested that Shelley was having an affair with Mary's stepsister, who they lived with. Quite some time. Yeah, great. Like it's like a soap opera. Like
Percy, what are you doing, man?
Oh, dude, not around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they sort of some time skips, and they go to Geneva with Lord Byron, who, Shelley's like created a friendship with, because he's another romantic poet, and with Mary's stepsister. So Mary like grew incredibly resentful of her stepsister Claire because, you know, they were having an affair and stuff. Claire ends up having a child with and being in love with Lord Byron. So it's weird, like
a love square.
Yeah, exactly. And Mary writes Frankenstein in Geneva. That's where they have the famous night of, you know, the story contest. Shelley writes Mont Blanc, blah, blah, blah. 2 years later, they return to England and find that Harriet has drowned herself in the Serpentine. It's really quite a life. And Percy and Mary then officially get married in December. They live struggling for a while, and 2 years later, again, Shelley sets off to go to Italy to deal with a lung problem and also to deliver Byron, his daughter. Mm-hmm. And they both kind of continue to deteriorate in health and mood. They're both pretty depressed. Shelley is convinced that he's having like all of these crazy health problems, and he is also still continuing to have, if not legitimate affairs, at least very, very close relationships and writing love poems about like tons of other women while he's married. You know, he travels here and there, and he develops a very strong friendship with Keats and Byron.
So you said Mary Shelley had loan problems? Was she taking money out or something, and she had to go to Italy?
No, sorry. Percy had lung problems.
Okay.
He had tuberculosis at one point. And so he just had like kind of a myriad of health issues. Somebody suggested he like go to Italy to figure it out. And then Byron was there also. And so they ended up like moving to Italy as a family and everything. Cool. And then finally, on July 1st of 1822, he set sail on his boat, the Don Juan, to Livorno in Italy to meet with Leigh Hunt and Byron, both poets, to discuss plans for a journal called The Liberal. And then they stay for a couple of days. And then on July 8th, they head back to Larisi. I don't know if that's exactly how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. And the inexperienced crew were caught in a huge storm and they all unfortunately drowned.
Oh my God, so this is Lord Byron.
No, this is Shelley and then his, like the captain of the boat and then basically one other crewmate whose name was Williams.
So he drowned? They all drowned?
Those three drowned, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the boat like that they were using was, it was basically constructed completely. It was like not fit for the sea. It was heavily overmasted and it was way too weighted on the top part of it. And so it would just
capsize
really easily to, capsize over.
Yeah.
And so 10 days later, their bodies wash ashore at Via Reggio and they're only recognizable by their clothing and a book of Keats's poetry that Shelley stashed in his inner breast pocket. And so Italian quarantine law dictates that the bodies have to be buried immediately to try and stop the spread of any disease. And then 1 month later, they're allowed to be exhumed to be cremated. So that's where we're at. Yeah.
Like so Mary Shelley's husband went on a scenic boat tour, drowned.
Yep.
And is now so now I'm curious to see where this story is going.
And like she's pregnant at the time. He already had another child. Like there's so much to fit into the story that I
But this is wild. So he just was like hanging out in the Mediterranean, drowned, and then washed ashore.
Washed ashore, like completely just mangled battered.
And just like, Oh my God. Well, that's insane. Oh my Lord. Well, you know, that's I yeah, like on that note, we're gonna play some more music, I guess. that's just insane. But I'll ask my questions after we play a couple songs. We got Timber Tambor and Hot Hot Heat up on deck, right?
Heck yeah, yep.
Yeah, so what was it? Velvet Gloves and Spit. We got Velvet Gloves and Spit by Timber Tambor, and we got Bandages by Hot Hot Heat coming up right now. And then we'll be back with some more talk about Mary Shelley and what she's going to do now that she has a dead husband.
Yeah.
All right, so don't touch that dial, everyone. Stay here with us on Working Title.
I could not release the inspiration till you asked me to. Came at your body relentlessly throughout the year. Or too far away, too near the shore, this honey moon. I was a stranger, too familiar and not enough. But I once saw the touch of your velvet hand upon my face. I recall velvet gloves and spit in your embrace, and I wanted nothing else. The haunted hotel room, the two-bit man child. I could not simply fall asleep next to you every night. Our castle in the sand, built too high too soon. And under waving palms and waving sails and waves, goodbye. Well, I once saw the touch of your velvet hand upon my face. I recall velvet gloves and spit and your embrace. Oh, I once saw the touch of your velvet hand upon my face. But I recall velvet gloves and spit at your embrace. And I wanted nothing else. Thank you.
welcome back, everyone, to Working Title here on CGLO, 1690 AM. Yeah, right. What's the name of the station? What is our time? I say it so much, you'd think I would remember, but, you know, here I am. But yeah, so Perry Shelley just washed up ashore and was buried. Percy Shelley just washed ashore and was buried according to Italian law.
Yeah, it was like plague law after, so that they made sure that no disease got spread. So they're buried, and then a month later they're exhumed so that, you know, their loved ones can give them a proper send-off and everything like that. And it also dictated that the bodies be burned. And so basically in attendance of the ceremony were E.J. Trelawney, I think his last name is. I'm just going to refer to him as E.J. because that's easier. It stands for Edward James, Lord Byron, and Lee Hunt. His closest friends. And Mary was not allowed to attend because woman and, you know, 18th century. Great time.
Men of the past.
Or 17th century. So basically they cremated his body on the beach. They went, the Williams, like the captain, got cremated first, and then Shelley was sick next.
Bachelor bonfire, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, just for the boys. And so basically EJ noted that the brains literally seethed, bubbled, and boiled, as in a cauldron. It was like a very graphic sight for them to watch. Lord Byron had to stop watching, and he went to like go
throw up, I'm sure. Yeah,
he went for a swim, but he threw up in the water. Like disgusting. So they deal with that, and then the smoke clears and there's nothing left but his bones and his basically his heart sitting perfectly reserved. So this is
Supernatural stuff. Okay, go on.
But basically they thought that because he'd had tuberculosis, they thought that it had calcified his heart so that it was able to like withstand the flame.
The heat.
So that's speculated a little bit later on, but I'll talk about that. But EJ Trelawney, basically he reaches into the fire and grabs the heart, burning the ever-loving crap out of his hand.
As you do.
And yeah, so he's like literally holding this person's heart, which is so crazy to imagine. And then he takes some of his ashes and puts them into a box with the heart.
So Percy's heart is now in a box.
In a box with some of his ashes.
Okay.
And there was a little bit of confusion because Wikipedia and the History Channel had two kind of conflicting things. But I think the consensus is that he gives the heart to Lee Hunt, who preserves it in wine spirits. And they get back to England and Mary writes him and is like, hey, can I have my husband's heart, please? Like, I literally wasn't allowed to
go to the funeral. Like, I want something. Yeah.
This is my husband. Give me his heart. And Byron had attested at the funeral that the heart belonged to Mary. Mm-hmm. And Hunt is like, no, my love for Shelley was much greater than hers, but basically like saying it was like the most grand love that anyone had ever had for someone. And I was like, what were they gay for? Like,
probably. Yeah, yeah, exactly, right? Like, was there something going on there? Yeah, like, yeah, you know.
He was a promiscuous man. I wouldn't put it past him.
I mean, he also stuck his hand into flames for a heart, so maybe.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it was his sign.
Yeah. So he is very resistant to give it up to her, but eventually Byron convinces him to give it up. And she's like, hey, thanks, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my heart. Thank you. And so she then proceeds to carry the preserved heart around with her as a memento mori wherever she goes.
Okay, go on. Go on. I'm like picturing, I want to hear how she wrapped it, because now it's affecting the image.
She wraps it in a silk scarf and literally like would just carry it around like in her whatever the equivalent of a purse would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, like her, oh my gosh.
Wow. Satchel or whatever. Like it just
went just like
everywhere.
Oh my literal gosh. No, I mean, no wonder this girl was writing Frankenstein.
It's exactly. Makes sense. And you know, it was more common than you might think. Like Napoleon left his heart to his wife, and like memento moris of like hair of a love.
Yeah, no, I mean like it's gross, but like I know I have an uncle who literally keeps it's gross. He keeps the foreskin of his children in his wallet. I know, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I was like it's like crazy Jewish, you know, stuff like it's crazy Jewish shit, you know, like apparently that's a thing. I had no idea until my family, you know, had pointed that out. But yeah, so it doesn't surprise me that somebody might be holding around a heart if somebody's literally doing that today.
Oh my God.
I know, right? It's ridiculous. It's gross and ridiculous. And he showed it to me and I immediately was like, why on earth?
Why would you do that?
It's like,
oh my God.
They're like laminated. It's ridiculous.
My whole story. Like,
yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to derail that. But go on.
Wow. Yeah. So clearly you're familiar with the idea. That's insane.
I'd say the least. Yeah.
What's your uncle's name? Just out of curiosity.
It's not Percy.
It's not Percy. It's Perry.
Yeah, or not Perry. Yeah. God, I don't even know anymore. What's his name?
Okay. No. Wow, that is shocking. Okay, so yeah, she's carried around this heart for, you know, her entire life. She eventually does birth a son to Percy. She has a son. He mysteriously, while he's in Italy, like just claims this child and like falsely cites Mary as the mother, but she didn't give birth to it. And nobody really knows exactly who did. Like they don't know if it's like this woman that was with him, this girl that he was like having an affair with, if it's Mary's stepsister. But anyway, so she has a surviving child, and basically she passes away in 1851, and then they wait a year, which was, I guess, custom at the time, and her son opens the drawer to her writing desk, which was a very important thing for her.
Yeah.
And he finds locks of hair and things like that, but also the remains of Percy's heart and a couple of the ashes, and they're wrapped in that silk scarf that she used, but also
say the first draft of Frankenstein at this point.
Not too far off, pages from Adonis, which is his book.
Yeah, see, I knew it was coming. Yeah.
Exactly. And the spooky, like, it, you know, yeah, it's yeah. But there's a line in the poem that where he says, "In my heartless breast and burning brain."
What? No way. That's wild.
Yeah, and actually there's a performance, I think it's a 1969 Brian Jones Memorial Concert, and Mick Jagger reads like a stanza from that poem on stage in front of a bunch of people.
That's wild. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was considered later that, you know, it could have been his liver instead of his heart. It was speculated by a lot of just carrying around his liver, like alcohol soaked.
That would be the most classic thing, I think, this whole story is like years later in history. This story is now being pulled on our radio show.
Yeah.
It's like in reality, this guy's heart was just his liver.
Yeah, it was there was like a couple, the New York Times published an article and then somebody else did, saying that it was probably his liver because the heart couldn't withstand the flames and the liver would have been soaked in seawater, which would have helped it.
Yeah.
But There was also later one account of, somebody suggesting that because of his history of disease, that the heart had been calcified and that made it able to withstand. I don't know if a heart and a liver anatomically look that similar. Also, I know that maybe their knowledge of those things.
That was my other thing, right? It was like, when they say like the heart was just sitting there, like, you know, in my head, I'm picturing like a perfect anatomical heart.
Yeah.
Like, cut. You know, but in reality, it probably was just a lump of blackened, you know, like a mass.
Yeah, exactly.
And they, yeah.
And they
so I guess at that point it could be a liver, but it's like, again, you know, a heart has a kind of a different shape, I think.
Yeah, and it was cited as being unusually small, which like maybe that also played a factor, but fair. I like to think for the poetry and romance
that it was his heart
fittingly engraved on his headstone they had the words cor cordium, which is Latin for heart of hearts or something along those lines, depending on the translation.
That's cute. How poetic.
Yeah,
it's like they were all poets, writers or something. It's like,
there are a group of friends who did nothing but write and then drink and then what a time.
I know, that's absolutely insane. That's insane. Before we dive into our kind of end of our show, we're gonna go straight into an ad break for you guys. So please keep that dial turned right here on CGLO 1690 AM. You know, you're listening to Working Title. And so please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this ad break, everybody.